The following episode of K-Voice was recorded at midnight, June 22nd, 2018. Things may have changed by the time you listen to this show. Enjoy the show.
K-Voice of Resistance!
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. When we look back to the presidential campaign in 2016, there's one extremely troubling image we all remember very well. That is the image of Donald Trump and other Republicans chanting, "Lock her up! Lock her up! Lock her up." They were talking about Hillary Clinton using personal emails, and they demanded over and over again that she be jailed.
That was the great Elijah Cummings, representative. This has been a very rough week. For me, it has been one of the hardest yet since the 2016 election. And it feels wrong to talk about how hard this week was, and last week as well. Considering there is unimaginable suffering going on in detention centers across America, and especially on the border, it seems silly to talk about my feelings when there is a child somewhere, sleeping on a cold prison floor, afraid and alone. A child who very well may never see their family again. But that's the nature of empathy, isn't it? That is what sets people like you and me aside from so many, and from so many on the right. We on the left fight for what is right not just because it is logical, more realistic, and in general smarter. Though, ultimately, it usually is. No, we fight for what is right because we feel for those more vulnerable, those who have been victimized, who have or are experiencing injustice. We feel for the lost, for the lonely, and the scared. That's what empathy is. The ability to share or at least understand the feelings of another. And for some, empathy is more of an intellectual practice. We logically understand the feelings someone may be feeling, and that is enough to make us care. And for some, bidden or not, we absorb the feelings and own up to the name Bleeding Heart Liberals. I'm proudly a Bleeding Heart Liberal. But admittedly, more emotional distance would serve me. And I'll let you know how to get more emotional distance, if I ever learn how to do so. Regardless of where your empathy takes you emotionally, I want us all to be a little forgiving if we found ourselves picking fights with loved ones and not knowing why. Had more colorful road rage, maybe? Or dissolved into a crying puddle at a silly commercial like a pregnant lady? You just may be having empathy pains. And before I get to the ins and outs of the train wreck that was this week, I want us all to remember to take some time away from the talking heads, the Twitter updates, and the Facebook pylons. Hike outside, play with your dog, read a trashy novel, or find someone who wants to have sex with you and have a good time. This is the kind of week that can burn us out. I, for one, have grown used to staring blindly at the TV, trying to remember to care. So it was weird when this week, caring hijacked my nervous system before I knew what was going on. And it seems I'm not alone. It seems to have woken the resistance out of its collective slumber, which may be the one and only good thing to come out of this week. So let's start with the story that has dominated the news streams. And it's not the only story this week, but in many ways it may as well have been. By now you know the details, so sorry if I'm reiterating them. And frankly, it hurts to speak of the pain that Mike Pence must have been feeling when he was met with that big gay dance party in Columbus, Ohio. How alien, how alone he must have felt, lost, as though he would never see his loved ones again.
We will not tolerate bigotry and hate in our country!
For me, it feels as though I just don't recognize the country I was born into. I mean, to live in a country with the kind of people who could, do, and support such a thing.
Oh, honey.
Yeah. Okay. I have empathy, but only for those who deserve it. And frankly, the worse Mike Pence feels, the better.
Oh, honey.
Pence's disgusting history on LGBTQ rights is no secret, including his 2015 Religious Freedom Restoration Act from when he was Indiana's governor, which meant that individuals and businesses could discriminate to their heart's content against the LGBTQ community on the basis of religion. More realistically, on the basis of Christianity. According to CNN, Pence was in Columbus to talk about tax reform at an event put on by the nonprofit closely aligned with the White House that reportedly raised millions to support Donald's agenda called America First Policies. And the week would have been amazing had it stopped at Mike Pence's big gay dance party. But no, no. Trump had to continue ripping children out of the arms of their parents just to piss us off.
And so I ask the question, are we really going to sit here, 70 members of the Congress of the United States of America in 2018, and have a hearing that just repeats the hearings the Senate had yesterday on Hillary Clinton's emails? We sent letter after letter, asking these committees to investigate the Trump administration's policy, which is now resulting in child internment camps. That's what I said, child internment camps.
Our tiny little dictator wannabe and his mess of an administration spent the week arguing that the family separation policy was a deterrent, biblically compliant, the Democrats' fault, something only Congress could fix, does not exist, or doesn't exist with crisis actors. Article 31 of the Refugee Convention clearly says that it is improper for any state to issue criminal laws that could deter asylum seekers as long as that asylum seeker is asking for asylum within a reasonable amount of time. But this administration is giving one teeny tiny middle finger to its long-standing international and national jurisprudence of basic beliefs. All this week, stories unfolded with the media in full force trying to get behind the lies and locked doors of the facilities we knew of that were housing these children. As I am putting together this podcast, we still don't know where many of the facilities are, where or how the girls are being kept, and also where specifically or how the infants are being kept, or as the administration calls them, tender-age children. The ones we do know of, mostly we know just because of community tips. And if ever we needed an example as to why the Fourth Estate, the media, was needed, this week was one. Our government imprisoning children in states, many of which, whose governors had no idea the federal government was doing so. They are imprisoning them and not letting us see inside the facilities that, for all reports, are woefully understaffed and somewhere around 72 degrees. And yes, there are cages. As the administration floundered as to how to defend their policy of indiscriminately jailing immigrant children, the Border Patrol finally weighed in, objecting to how the child detention centers are being depicted in the media. Specifically, they take issue with the word cages. Not because it is inaccurate. No, but because it makes them look bad. Well, I'm with Stephen Colbert, who pointed out on Twitter that, quote, "One thing I know for sure. No person on the right side of history has ever had a nitpick about what the definition of cage is," unquote. Now, Border Patrol does say that it's not inaccurate, and they added that they may be cages, but people are not being treated like animals. But they are being treated like animals. That's just a fact. They are being treated like animals, and it looks like they are being treated worse than anything living should be treated. Federal court filings that include a half dozen sworn statements from Latino teens jailed at the Shenandoah Valley Juvenile Center in Virginia for months or years show that immigrant children as young as 14 housed at the juvenile detention center say that they were beaten while handcuffed and locked up for long periods of solitary confinement, left nude and shivering in concrete cells. Multiple detainees say that the guards stripped them of their clothes and strapped them to chairs with bags placed over their heads. A 15-year-old Honduran detainee said, quote, "Whenever they used to restrain me and put me in the chair, they would handcuff me, strap me down all the way from your feet all the way to your chest, and you couldn't really move. They have total control over you. They also put a bag over your head. It has little holes you can see through it, but you feel suffocated with the bag on." In addition to the children's firsthand translated accounts and court filings, a former child development specialist who worked inside the facility independently told the Associated Press this week that she saw kids there with bruises and broken bones they blamed on the guards. She spoke on the condition of anonymity because she was not authorized to publicly discuss the children's cases. Now, I could spend a whole podcast on this one detention center alone. but there is more to get to. So much more. So please, check it out on my Facebook page at K Voice of Resistance. Also reported that in court filing, staff working on behalf of the Office of Refugee Resettlement, ORR, are routinely drugging detained child immigrants with psychotropics without their parents' consent. This is profoundly disturbing. Not that the other allegations from the Shenandoah Center weren't. But one child, cited in the lawsuit, reported taking up to 9 pills in the morning and another 7 in the evening without knowing what the medication was. The memo filed in the lawsuit on April 16th reads, quote, ORR routinely administers children with psychotropic drugs without lawful authorization. When youth object to taking such medication, ORR compels them. ORR neither requires nor asks for a patient's consent before medicating a child, nor does it seek lawful authority to consent in the parent's stead. Instead, ORR, or faculty staff, sign consent forms, anointing themselves with authority to administer psychotropic drugs to confined children, unquote. The lawyers representing the children said that psychotropic medications were used at all facilities where the federal government holds unaccompanied minors. One child, identified in court records as Julio Z, said staff threw him to the floor and forced him to take the medication. He said he witnessed staff pry another child's mouth open and force him to swallow the pill. When Julio Z attempted to refuse the medication, he said the doctor ignored him. Quote, they told me that if I did not take the medicine, I could not leave. Sometimes they would give me forced injections, unquote. The medications, as many psychotropics do, often come with severe side effects. Julio Z reported gaining 45 pounds in a matter of 2 months. A mother of a child identified in court records as Isabella M said the medications were so powerful her daughter repeatedly fell down because she couldn't walk. According to a public defender on the border, his clients have been sobbing in meetings. They don't ask legal questions. They just want to know where their kids are. Even immigration judges are incredulous at what's happening. He wrote in the WAPO that one judge had an emotional outburst, and this judge was not the only one. He slammed his hand on the desk, sending the pen flying, and said, quote, I can't understand this. If someone takes your wallet at the jail, they give you a receipt for it. They take your kids and you get nothing? Unquote. And we need to keep sight of the fact that this has been happening for 2 months. 2 months, and it took this long to really absorb into the public conscience. A foster mom describing migrant children she cared for said the 10-year-old boy woke screaming in the night, and the 9-year-old boy barely ate for 3 weeks after being separated from his dad, and a 5-year-old girl went numb after finding out her dad had been deported. And this whole time, they, the government, has been obfuscating, sidestepping, manipulating information. This manipulation of propaganda that the administration is in the habit of doing has been conflating enforcing the law with applying the maximum legally available sanction to any potential infraction. But that's an insane way to enforce any law. As someone on Twitter pointed out, the Supreme Court has held that you can be arrested and locked up for failure to wear a seatbelt, which, like any illegal border crossing, is a misdemeanor offense. But as a rule, that's not how we enforce the law because it would be wildly disproportionate. And regardless, Chris Hayes of MSNBC pointed out that according to internal CBO documents obtained by Hayes, from June 3rd to 11th, fully 91% of parents being prosecuted at the border and forcibly separated from their children are being prosecuted for a misdemeanor. Additionally, in that same period of time, 366 children were separated from their parents. Also, and this is still a bit unclear, but the documents appear to show that the child separation is happening before the decision to prosecute. That means that there are parents being ripped away from their kids who aren't even being prosecuted. And understand that the government has been arguing that if asylum seekers would just legally enter the ports of entry and surrender themselves legally, this would not happen to them. And I could spend a day laying out their lies this past week, but I'm sure you've already heard a great deal of them yourselves. Everything came to a head for me, personally, when I was watching the Rachel Maddow show on MSNBC on Tuesday. And Rachel, who's not dispassionate, but also not what I would call emotional. And while breaking news about the first word she had gotten about where the young children, the toddlers and babies, were being detained, she broke down. She couldn't even deliver the news. She had to cut to Lawrence O'Donnell to deliver it.
Put up the graphic of this. Thank you. Do we have it? No. Three tender age shelters in South Texas. Lawyers and medical providers. Just, I think I'm going to have to hand this off. Yeah. Sorry. That does it for us tonight. We'll see you again tomorrow. Now it is time for the last word with Lawrence O'Donnell, where he is live in Brownsville, Texas.
Later that same night, MSNBC's Stephanie Ruhle started crying during her broadcast. That is how unusual, that is how devastating, how cruel, how big this thing is. And forgive me for rehashing what I'm sure most of you know, but there is a reason. This has to be just about the only news story you hear this entire week. There's a reason. And as thousands of these children have been ripped from their parents, the head of HHS, Alex Azar, has been opening the first tent city to hold children and babies, to hold the 70 new children a day who need to be locked up. And Alex Azar spent his past Saturday at his college reunion. Yeah, as Rachel said, it sure smells like when Condoleezza Rice went to see Spamalot during Hurricane Katrina. How tone deaf do you have to be? So what is all of this? Basically, the terroristic toddler who runs our country kidnapped 2,000 plus children at gunpoint and locked them up. He then dangled these kidnapped children in front of other immigrants, saying, "Do you want this to happen to your kid? No? Then stay away." Fancy that. The president of the United States. Meanwhile, he has deported some of the parents without their kids, because their kids and the parents are on different legal tracks. Therefore, they're all lost in the system. So the president kidnapped children and then said that out of the goodness of his own heart, he will let the kidnapped children who are detained in the future be detained with their parents.
Oh, Donald, you're so generous.
And then proceeded to take a victory lap for changing the policy he put in place. He did it by signing an executive order, which he didn't need to do. All he had to do was tell Sessions to stop being a dick. And understand. This order he issued does nothing for the children already detained. They will, it seems, remain separated and alone. This executive order only applies for future detainees. This is brutal. This crisis was caused by the administration's new zero-tolerance policy, under which everyone crossing the border illegally, even those who present themselves to officials and say they are seeking asylum, is subject to criminal prosecution. That policy is still in place. The goal of the executive order is to shift from detaining children and parents separately to detaining families together. But this would still be a harsher system than it had been previously, in which families seeking asylum would usually be released while their case was moved through the system with ankle bracelets on. And according to ICE, had a 99% rate of actually turning themselves back in when they were supposed to. And as their case moves through the system, it can take months or even years. Those families would now be imprisoned for extended periods for the crime of crossing the border. A misdemeanor. A misdemeanor like speeding. Donald's executive order instructs the Attorney General to go to court to seek a change in the Flora settlement. So here's the rub. Donald's executive order instructs the Attorney General, Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III, to go to court and seek a change in the Flora settlement, a consent decree that says that the government can't detain immigrant children for more than 20 days. And the very next day, after the theater that was the signing of Donald's precious EO, the DOJ did exactly that. If they get what they want, they will be able to hold families indefinitely, putting a family together in a cage for months or years. The DOJ also requested that the judge waive the requirement that says children be held in facilities licensed as state-approved daycare centers. So let me get this straight. Women can't have abortions unless the doctor has emergency room admitting privileges, which is completely unnecessary. But children, babies, through teens, can be held at private prisons without state licensure requirements, which basically just means that the place where the children live needs to be suitable and monitored. Remember, these are private prisons who are wont to cut corners. As Charlie Pierce of Esquire put it, quote, "Remember when Mitt Romney burbled that he wanted to double Guantanamo and everybody laughed? At least he only meant in Cuba." Unquote. This is America. The good news is, as CNN reports, the Justice Department lawyers had to go to U.S. District Judge Dolly Gee in California to modify the rule to give Donald's administration maximum flexibility to detain families. Well, in 2015, Gee ruled that the Obama administration's extended detention of undocumented mothers and children had violated the Flores Agreement, setting up the court settlement that now imposes the 20-day limit on holding children with their families. Stephen Legomsky, a former Obama administration DHS official, said that, quote, "The whole point of Judge Gee's decision was to avoid the prolonged and unnecessary detention of children. Now that she's seen the level of suffering that an unfettered president has elected to inflict on children, I would imagine that if anything, her resolve will be even stronger." Unquote. And this whole family separation policy, this zero tolerance policy, has been planned since when they took office. Chris Hayes broke the story from leaked documents in March of 2017 and was confirmed in a following CNN interview with the then Department of Homeland Security director and death walker, John Kelly.
"We all should be able to agree that in the United States of America, we will not intentionally separate children from their parents. We will not do that. We are better than that. We are so much better."
Okay, before I go on, we all should know better than to say that this is not America, because it is profoundly America. We can say this isn't the America we should be striving to be, but we cannot say that this is not America. From America's founding, white people ripped Native American babies from their families and, if not killed them, raised them as our own. And then we stole children and used them as slaves. And when those slaves had children, we resold them as slaves for many many years. We then went to incarcerating Japanese American toddlers in internment camps. And since slavery, we have been beating, killing, and institutionally incarcerating young black and brown kids and teenagers for fake, mocked up, or minor offenses. And I'll let Roger Moore take it away, because we then went to, quote, allowing priests to sexually abuse children for decades, to forcing buckets of high fructose corn syrup down kids' throats until half of them were part of a childhood obesity epidemic, to turning our schools into killing fields because we love our guns more than we love our kids. Who the hell are we kidding? Stop being shocked and surprised that Trump is kidnapping Hispanic children from their parents as if this isn't who we are. Yes, it is. It has always been who we are. Don't say that Trump is violating our American values. Abusing children is an historic American value. Be proud, America. Trump is us. In order to stop this madness, we must stop telling each other fairy tales about the past and confront the present by putting our bodies on the line for these kids. Find out in your area where they have stashed the children Homeland Security have kidnapped. 18 states have jails where they've put kids. In my area, it is the Betsy DeVos-funded joint called Bethany Christian Services in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Go there, surround the building, and refuse to leave until the children are reunited with their parents. If these were your kids, that's exactly what you would do. They are your kids." Unquote. And look, there are heroes in all of this. The resistance has woken from its collective slumber. First is Congress. Senate and House Republicans have failed to agree on an immigration bill that would end the family separations. But every Senate Democrat has signed a bill by Senator Dianne Feinstein that would prohibit the separations. No Republican, of course, has signed it. And it's likely that none will. As evidence of the scale of the family separations began to mount, early this month, elected Democrats really stepped up. They visited immigration detention centers, peering into them and interviewing people when they could, where they acted like reporters. On June 3rd, Senator Jeff Merkley of Oregon showed up in Brownsville, Texas, only to be denied access to a detention facility and threatened by its supervisor with removal by police. Representative Pramila Jayapal of Washington, a former immigrant activist, managed to get inside a federal prison in her state where mothers had been separated from their young children were being held. And it seems that just about all the Democratic lawmakers have been speaking up in one form or another.
So, in conclusion, Mr. Chairman, We need you. Those children need you. And I'm talking directly to my Republican colleagues. We need you to stand up to President Trump. We need you to join us in telling him that we reject this mean policy. We need you to tell him to abandon this policy. We need you to remind him that this is the United States of America, and it is a great country. And we need you to stand up for those children. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I yield back.
In small ways, they did. Republicans complained to their king. And maybe it helped. The first real glimpse inside the juvenile detention centers came last week from a man named Antar Davidson, who worked in one for 4 months. It was understaffed and poorly equipped. Davidson said that he quit after his supervisor ordered him to separate 3 young siblings who were crying and consoling one another. Detained children receive medical care from public health doctors and nurses and legal support from public interest attorneys. And these professionals have helped expose the conditions in the facilities. On Tuesday, several of the nation's governors, including some Republicans, withdrew National Guard troops who have been deployed to the border in protest of the administration's policies. And then on Tuesday, when news broke of where the quote-unquote tender age detention centers, where young children, infants and toddlers among them, are housed without their parents, the mayor of Houston, a Democrat, Sylvester Turner, announced that a new facility had been planned for his city, but that he opposed it and suggested that he would attempt to slow walk any approval. And then nationwide protests have been growing in number, size and intensity, and mass protests are planned this weekend. And perhaps the largest will be on the 30th. Public interest groups have been bearing down on the facilities as well, trying to counsel and give and get information as they could. Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen was ran out of a Mexican restaurant.
Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen is in a Mexican restaurant of all places. The fucking goal. Shame on you.
Shame.
On Tuesday, Democratic attorneys general from 20 states and the District of Columbia demanded the administration end the policy of splitting up families in a letter to U.S. Attorney General Jefferson Beauregard Sessions and Kirstjen Nielsen. And then there's the airlines. Airlines, after finding out that children had been transferred on their airlines, issued statements saying that the government could not use them for such nefarious reasons. On one flight to LaGuardia, a flight attendant tried to communicate to some boys in matching tracksuits she is suspected of being these kids. She slipped them a note asking, "What are your names and what are your parents' names?" By the time the flight landed, there was a large contingent of people who had showed up to show their support for the boys. And that is just a smattering of the resistance. That doesn't cover the GoFundMes that sprung up to fund bail for at least one immigrant in hopes of reuniting somebody with their child. They had a goal of $1,500 and instead earned $17 million in a matter of days. And this resistance shows no sign of slowing. And this issue will be highly motivating in 2018. Make no mistake, the resistance rose up in the face of outrage fatigue and pushed our immoral president to at least moderately amend his policy. And we will keep wearing him and wearing them down while doing what we can to comfort and help the immigrants so wrongly imprisoned. And it will take a village. And the government, you know, has no plans to reunite the families. It is up to small agencies and public interest groups, nonprofits, and individuals to help them find their children. There is also a firm who is offering pro bono work to provide legal aid to any government employee who wants to be a conscientious objector. Today, Friday. And as I said, the 30th will be a massive day of action. MoveOn.org is mobilizing the protest, and there is likely to be one near you. It is up to every one of us. Everyone. If there was ever a time to become an active member of the resistance, it is now. Okay, I'm going to put together an extra episode, so there will be 2 episodes coming up next week. Thank you for sticking with me and this episode of K, Voice of Resistance. All right, take care of yourselves out there. And as always, resist.